Welcome to Chicago Jazz Revealed. I'm Mike Jeffers here live at Katarina's 1920 West Irving Park Road here in Chicago. We are here every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. till 8 p.m. recording. And then, of course, you're listening to this live on WDCB Wednesday nights from 9 until 10. So tonight on the show, I have a wonderful jazz violinist. Yes, I said jazz violinist. And many of you know his name, James Sanders. We're going to talk to James about his different groups that he has and how he got started playing violin, along with how he got started playing jazz violin. But before we get to James, why don't we take a listen to something off of his new CD, Blue Violin, A Jazz Legacy. This first tune we're going to hear is something that James, we were talking off mic about it, so I thought, hey, why don't we just open up with the title track, Blue Violin. So this is James Sanders with the Kevin O'Connell Trio here on Chicago Jazz Revealed, 90.9 FM, WDCB. Welcome to Chicago Jazz Revealed. I'm Mike Jeffers, live from Katarina's, 1920 West Irving Park Road here in Chicago. And I am very excited to be sitting here right next to a jazz violin player from Chicago, James Sanders. How are you, James?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. The crowd awesome. Is filing in right now, so we're going to let them take a seat. And, you know, I'm glad you came down because you've got so many different things going on. You know, James and I have played together before.
That's right.
And actually, you're one of the first guys in town that hired me, I think, when I first got back, when we used to play down at the Music Mart.
Right. Nick Schneider.
Nick Schneider, and Tom Weitzis and I. Right. We used to go down there and scare people at lunchtime and play all this wild jazz stuff.
Yeah, Nick Schneider told me about you and said, this is a hot young drummer in town, and, you know, you need to call this guy. And we had some fun, didn't we?
Oh, man. Yeah. It was always fun watching Nick walk in with the bass and go set up, and there's all these people all over the place, and we start playing, and you start playing violin, and people are looking at you like you're from another planet, because they're like, wait a minute, this guy's playing jazz with a violin.
Right, what a strange concept.
Right, what a strange concept, and that's kind of what I wanted to find out a little bit. Why don't we start there? We know you have a new CD, Blue Violin, with the Kevin O'Connell Trio, and you're also playing in your group, Conjunto. But before we get into all of that, I mean, how does somebody get into jazz violin? I mean, you obviously started as a classical player, I'd imagine.
Right. You know, I have my degrees and studied to be a classical violinist, and I am a classical violinist. And you know, that's the predominant pedagogy if you really want to learn how to play your axe and you're a violinist. You know, sometimes when you play a horn, you know, you can get involved with jazz bands and so forth at a fairly young age. It's not quite the case with violin, even though that's starting to change.
Mm-hmm.
But I met Johnny Frigo when I came back to Chicago. We were actually busking out in front of Water Tower Place, and Johnny Frigo walked by, and he said, you know, I'd always played by ear, but, you know, it was just sort of a little thing I did for fun. Johnny Frigo came by and said, well, you have to come hang out at Toulouse, where I'm playing Joe Vito. And that was sort of the beginning of this fascination.
Well, I mean, you went to school for classical, though.
Yeah, right.
And you just came back and you decided to get into doing that. I mean, there must have been some sort of leeway, like when you first started playing. When did you start playing violin? I mean, was it real young?
Yeah, I was 6 years old. And my mom used to listen to all kinds of music, so she used to love to listen to FM 100, you know, and the Mantovani strings and all that kind of stuff. But she was a music nut. Music was gone 24 hours a day. So even though I studied classical, you know, she was always playing a lot of different things.
You know,
and she was open to a lot.
So it was getting ingrained in your system.
Right. And I learned how to play, I would never practice, but I learned how to play the Speed Racer theme on the violin by ear. And my teacher thought, well, that was a sign of something.
At least he's doing something. At least there's that. He didn't practice, but he
got the Speed Racer. Yeah, you know, she was about to throw in the towel, and I pulled that on her, so.
So you went from Speed Racer straight to Bach, right?
Right. Then, you know, I went to Lane Tech High School, you know, on the...
Well, that's a good music program, too, right? That's like heavy duty.
Yeah, when I got to Lane Tech High School, actually, there was a lot of great Chicago musicians that were there when I was there. Some people that you might know would be George Flutis, the drummer, was there. Mark Walker, the drummer. Dwayne Harris, Chris Clementi, the bass player. These were all people that were just in the program, and you know, many others that you probably wouldn't know. But Lane had a long tradition of excellence in music,
mm-hmm.
and I love that place. You know, I still just have great memories of it.
Yeah, so you really kind of got into that and got a little bit more serious, obviously,
right,
when you went to
right.
high school.
And the orchestra director took me aside, and, you know, by the time I was a senior, you know, I was a concertmaster of the orchestra and played a solo and, you know, was in the Chicago Youth Orchestra. And in the Chicago Youth Orchestra, I got a full scholarship to go to a school in Indiana, DePauw University.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Because the conductor there was a conductor in DePauw, and he said, you know, come audition. I auditioned, and, you know, I got this nice scholarship, and my parents said, great, see you later.
Finally, get out of
yeah,
here.
Yeah, get out of here. This is what we've been waiting for. I don't think more.
So you came back at Thanksgiving, and the whole room, your whole room was gone, right?
Right?
It's like
gone.
A TV room
yeah,
now.
Yeah. Somebody had moved in already. You know?
So you're down there. Now, DePauw's got a great classical program, doesn't it?
Right. It was a great classical program. First year I was there, we went on tour to Vienna, you know, and so on. And then, you know, halfway through my studies at DePauw, I got in the Spoleto Festival and, you know, went to Italy and, you know, did the opera festival there. So I was pretty involved with a lot of things. And then from DePauw, I went and got my master's at Yale School of Music, where mm-hmm. I had a chance to work with the best, you know, classical teachers and performers of the time,
yeah.
really, you know. It was a great experience. Tokyo String Quartet used to take the train in New York and go hang out at Juilliard and, you
oh,
know,
yeah. Yeah.
you know, Aspen Music Festival. The
sounds
whole
terrible.
Yeah, it's awful, right? Yeah, those people on the East Coast, you know what? They don't know what they're missing.
No,
what,
yeah.
You
oh, know. God. So you're doing obviously heavy into classical music
right,
at that
right,
point.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you started trying to experiment with jazz with the violin, or did you hear somebody?
Well, you know, it was funny. You know, as we go through phases, you know, you get different notions in your head. So when I met Johnny and I started playing jazz and I started, you know, getting involved with that, somehow or other, I thought that, well, okay, I have to become something different than what I currently am. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And
so it didn't really happen until you got back here.
Right,
Chicago.
Really
yeah.
didn't happen until I got back to Chicago. And, I started transcribing Miles Davis solos. I studied with Brad Good. I used to go to his house and spend, you know, he used to give me these three-hour lessons.
Yeah.
He was an amazing guy, really generous with his time. And you know, so I was finding my direction with this. I just felt this urge to do it. But, of course, I still was working as a classical violinist. But what I discovered along the way is that I could reconcile all of it together. You know, I could be a classical violinist, jazz violinist, Latin.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't have to give anything up, really, because
mm-hmm.
good music is good music. I think that's – it took me a minute to get to that conclusion, but I think that's where I felt the best.
Well, I think you're right, too, because, I mean, so many people want to pigeonhole people into, that guy's a classical player, that guy's a straight-ahead
right.
bebop player, that guy's this guy. And,
right.
and really, when you get down to it, I mean, especially in jazz,
right.
I mean, how many styles are combined together in jazz?
Exactly.
I mean, just playing a gig, you know, I mean, you'll play a bossa, a samba, a blues shuffle, a straight ahead thing, you know.
Yeah, you know, and a lot of times people feel more comfortable, you know, saying, well, this is this kind of jazz or this kind of jazz
right.
or this is pop. But, you know, when you look at jazz artists today, you know, Orbert Davis, he's got his Chicago Jazz Philharmonic, you
right.
know. Chick Corea, what's he doing? I played in orchestras accompanying Chick with his own compositions that were very classical. And
mm-hmm.
are you going to try to say that Chick isn't like one of the greatest right. jazz musician on the planet? You know,
now Chick's classical for you.
Right, right,
know,
right.
Yeah.
Stanley Clarke, all these guys. If you really look closely, they draw their inspiration and they pull training from a lot of different disciplines and really bring it together to reach the highest level in jazz. And I went to see Ray Brown when he was alive at the showcase. And, you know, I was stunned when he pulls out his bow and starts playing this beautiful arco, you know, I think it was around midnight or something. But, you know, watching him for 2 seconds, I could tell that he really, really did his homework.
Yeah.
And studied.
He wasn't faking.
No. Bow technique. Yeah, his bow technique was really on the mark. And I thought, oh, okay, you know. And it just sort of confirmed what I felt, that you know, there's quality's quality. If it's good, it's good, you know. And, and that's.
Well, and so you started doing a lot of jazz gigs, but obviously, being a violin player, you're the leader. Because, I mean, there's probably not a lot of groups saying, hey, you know what, we got sax, we got upright bass, piano, drums. You know what we need? We need a violin player.
Yeah, you know, we want a fiddle player right in there in between
right,
the...
Right,
you know, and I have some I have some young people coming to me, they want lessons, they want, you know, and I say, I'm really happy to share what I know, you know. When I did approach Johnny about having lessons, he says, you know, what I do is so intuitively, I don't know how I would explain it to you. And so the challenge was then to find a way to gain this knowledge to assimilate the violin into these different situations, you know, because people weren't necessarily that comfortable with it because it wasn't a common thing, you know. But, you know, once they saw it could work or whatever, then they might be more open to it.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the jazz vocabulary, too, comes from wind-blown instruments, you know, a lot of the phrasing and a lot of the nuances, really, with things that would materialize if you're blowing into something. So when you're going to play jazz on the violin, you have to respect that that's the origin of it, you know, and you have to change your approach to playing the instrument.
Yeah. I didn't even think of that, but you're right. I mean, you know, a lot of the phrasing, comes from the vocal or comes from the wind-blown instrument, the woodwind, and all that stuff.
Right.
So you're playing around town. You're getting your chops together on violin and everything. What was like the first group that you really started that it felt cohesive and you were really starting to do stuff with, you know, moving forward.
I think I started to get traction when, you know, like those early gigs, you know, I was trying to find my way, you know, into a setting that, you know, I could feel comfortable with. I still had a little while adapting to not being acoustic, you know, because my whole life I'd been acoustic.
Because now you're plugged into an amp, right?
Right. It's not, you can't really play with a drum set, you know, unless you're going to make the guy play really soft all night, you know. And so that was a challenge. But I started playing... with a Latin group, I slowly formed this Latin group, Conjunto, about 13 years ago now.
Has it been that long?
It's been a long time.
Wow.
And that was where, you know, I grew up in Wrigleyville. It was Puerto Rican neighborhood, you know. My mom was from Dominican Republic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I know this. I got this. You know, I could feel that and, you know, just as easy as talking to you here, you know. And so... That seemed to be a place where I could at least get this nice entry point, and we were lucky enough to have a steady gig where we played practically, you know, every week for about 5-6 years in the little village. And then, you know, I got a lot of valuable experience there.
Yeah. You know. Well, and then you've taken that group. I mean, you guys, how many albums do you guys have now?
We have 2 albums, and we've played, you know, just about every venue in Chicago. We played Millennium Park, had a big night there. And, you know, we played the Jazz Fest, and now we have a once-a-month study here at Katarina's.
Right, at Katarina's. You're here at Katarina's.
Katarina's.
She
gets on my case for that. She goes, now, look, I know you're bilingual. I know you can get this thing, you know?
Hey, I got it the first time, man. You got to catch up with me.
Yeah, well, you
know,
you're the man, Mike. I mean, that's why you're...
It's because I can pronounce the names correct.
Around your
neck. Right, sure. Yeah, that's me. So, yeah, you're here the last Saturday of every month. So this month, September, you're going to be here on the 28th at Katarina's at 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll tell you what, why don't we take a listen to, since we're talking about it, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the Blue Violin, your new CD with the Kevin O'Connell Trio, and we'll talk about all the other things you have coming up. But since we're talking about Conjunto and the fact that you're going to be performing here live at Katarina's, make note, September 28th at 10 o'clock. Why don't we take a listen? Now, what album is this off of?
This is off of Live in Little Village, and it's the album we made when we were playing in Little Village. And this tune is called Free Delivery, and it's actually written by the piano player in the band at the time, Don O'Neill.
Okay. Well, let's take a listen to a free delivery from Conjunto here on Chicago Jazz Revealed, 90.9 FM, WDCB, and ChicagoJazz.com. Okay, we're back here at Chicago Jazz Revealed with yours truly, Mike Jeffers here. And we're sitting here. We got a little bit more time with James Sanders. We just heard a track from Conjunto that was Free Delivery, recorded live in Little Village.
Right.
And that was the first recording of Conjunto.
That's right.
And then what's the newest one?
The next one we made was at the Chicago Recording Company, and that was called Chicago Sessions.
Well, and you guys have really, I mean, I've seen that name, obviously, you know, for years now. And you guys have played Millennium Park. You guys have toured a little bit, haven't you? Haven't you played different places?
Yeah, you know, local, not big tours,
okay.
International, but you know, we've done some local things in the Midwest. And what's really nice is there seems to be just this base of people that appreciate what we're doing and kind of show up. We might not see all of them at every gig, of course, but you just kind of know they're there, and you know.
Well, that music is infectious too. I mean, you know, when you guys start grooving, I mean.
You know, and what we do here at Katarina's.
Ah, very good, very good. She'll let you stay.
What we do here is a little different, you know, in that it is we use vocalists, and it'll turn into a dance set.
Really?
Yeah, it turns into a dance set, and this floor gets packed. It's like a Cuban
cabaret. No
kidding. Yeah. And you're right. You know, once we start grooving, we feel it. They feel it. It could be pretty magical.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard you guys. I mean, it's like a truck coming down the street, man, and when it starts going, it's just that groove just starts going, and it's like, just get out of the way, man.
Right.
Now we go from Conjunto, and as if you weren't busy enough doing that, you decided, hey, you know what I think I'm going to do now? I'm going to launch my solo jazz career here. And now, is this your second recording as a solo?
I had one recording I made a long time ago called Minstrels.
Okay.
It was the very first recording I made, period. And it's a nice album, but, you know, I don't feel like it was really, really straight ahead, really swinging, you know.
Yeah.
And not that I was pretending to at the time, you know. But with this album, I wanted to throw my hat in the ring as far as, you know, really a jazz. I know we're trying not to categorize, but in the sense that we're saying, you know, swinging straight ahead,
right.
You know, bebop. And that was that was kind of like what I felt was necessary for me to do, you know. Personally and so forth.
Well, and of course you have Kevin O'Connell on piano,
right?
And
who's really a monster.
Well, and you have Stu Miller on bass.
Oh yeah, he's not too bad.
No, he's
right?
not too bad. And then of course your buddy George Flutis from Lane Tech.
Yeah. What about that? You know.
I guess it's an okay album.
Yeah, I guess you know these guys.
they can make it swing a little bit, I suppose. So why Blue Violin? What's
well,
the significance in that name?
That's a Stuff Smith tune.
Okay.
That he wrote. And when I first heard Stuff Smith, you know, I really wasn't quite ready to understand Stuff Smith. You know.
Mm-hmm.
But in delving deeper into swinging on the violin and really playing jazz, you realize that this guy is it.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, he really... So his phrasing and, you know, his articulation is completely unprecedented. And, you know, you don't hear any violinist doing what he did before he did it.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't think like a violin. You know, he really thought like someone that was singing or playing a horn. And he does sing on some of his albums.
Oh, he does, yeah.
So he is a singer. But that's how he plays the violin. So anyhow, he was a great inspiration. And there's a tune, Blue Violin. And so we just... recorded that and made that the title cut.
No, oh, perfect. Now, because we're going to hear a track from Blue Violin,
right.
But before we get to that, I mean, you've got It Might As Well Be Spring, Bouncing With Bud. There's bebop tunes on here, Seven Steps to Heaven.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite a mixture of tunes. I mean, are these some of the influential artists that might have, or are these just tunes that you really like?
Well, most of those tunes are, the only tune written by a violinist is Blue Violin.
Right.
So I think part of the idea of the album is like, okay, look, here's some stuff that isn't, you know, it's not necessarily violin-centric, you know. It's just jazz,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we're going to do it and see what you think. That's up to you, you know.
That's very. That's a pretty easy way of thinking about it. You know, hey, okay, right. Do you like it or not?
Right, that's it.
You know.
Right.
Now I know I came to your CD release over at Jazz Showcase, right. And it was packed.
That was a nice night.
Oh man! Now, are you guys playing anywhere else, or you got kind of gigs here and there? I know you did the festival, Jazz Fest, last year, and stuff like that.
Yeah, we did. We did a Chicago Jazz String Summit, and we played. And this particular setup, there's been a couple opportunities. Sometimes the band's not all available, but I think what's happened with me as a result of doing this is, I think that I'm being invited into more. Situations where they just need somebody that plays lead and plays jazz.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're not, like, thinking, oh, no, this guy plays the violin. Or they're thinking, okay, whatever, that's fine.
Right.
You know, and I think it's opened some opportunities in a way.
Yeah.
You know, and part of it is the way I look at it, and part of it is just the way, you mm-hmm. know, people might think of it. Like, yeah, that'll work.
Well, you know, that's interesting, too, because, I mean, playing with you, but then also hearing you play, you approach it, I think, I mean, because I've played with other string players, you know, jazz-wise and stuff, and I think you approach it more along the lines of almost a horn player, you know, playing jazz on a violin, because I think it's a little tough to probably play a string instrument and get those phrasings unless you're really thinking of it a certain way and really studied the music and got inside the music. Just because of the layout of the violin, I would imagine.
Right. Physically, just the way you manifest sound on the violin and the way you produce sound and the mechanics involved, you know, it could remove you in some ways mm-hmm. from naturally falling into those idioms. But it is possible to, you know, and then that's what was so great about Stuff, that he came along and said, you know, look. I mean, Grappelli was magnificent and is one of my idols, but you know, he was still a violinist in the sense that you know, and he did stuff on the violin that was the envy of any wind player. You know, like, man, you know, you got to have a violin to play the Django stuff. You know, you got to have a fiddle to really pull that stuff off and sound, you know, that gypsy jazz and so. What we were talking about is someone is really kind of trying to blur those lines of, you know, strings over here, winds over there, and, you know, combine, you know, work together.
Yeah, you know. And put the whole thing together.
Right.
Well, why don't we hear a track? Should we hear Blue Violin, or is there another one on here that you think would be a good track off of here?
Well, I love Voyage. I love, you know, Voyage's up-tempo and SOS. SOS was like my favorite track, you know, with the big drum solo in the middle.
What, there's a drum solo?
Yeah.
All right, well, that one wins. wins on Chicago Jazz Revealed, man. That's it. So why don't we close this out? I'm glad you came in. Thanks for coming into Chicago Jazz Revealed. Of course, you can get more details at jamessandersviolin.com or on the Facebook. Details on Facebook. And what's the Facebook?
It's James Sanders Violin.
James Sanders Violin on Facebook.
Yeah, go there, like it on Facebook, and we'll forever be connected.
Whether you like it or not.
That's good.
That's what I use on the Chicago Jazz. Thank you for liking me, whether you like it or not. You have now liked me. Well, thanks for coming in, James. And why don't we hear that track, SOS, here. This is from Blue Violin, A Jazz Legacy, James Sanders along with the Kevin O'Connell Trio here on WDCB 90.9 FM and also ChicagoJazz.com. Support for WDCB and Chicago Jazz Revealed comes from the University of Chicago Presents, announcing its new series, Jazz at the Logan, at the Rava and David Logan Center for the Arts in Hyde Park. The season opens on October 25th with the Bad Plus and continues with Annette Cohen, Dick Hyman, Bill Charlop, and others. Single ticket and subscription information at chicagopresents.u, chicago.edu. Okay, we're back here at Chicago Jazz Revealed, and this is Mike Jeffers, by the way. Thank you very much. The audience is filing in here still. We're doing a little bit of an early set tonight because we wanted to get everybody on and have plenty of time to talk. Of course, you can hear the full interviews on the podcast, which is on chicagojazz.com. So you'll hear them talk on Chicago Jazz Revealed on 90.9 FM WDCB. And then you can turn over to chicagojazz.com and get more details and hear a full podcast of the show. The show runs roughly about an hour and a half, hour and 40 minutes. So that's the nice thing about podcasting. We can pontificate. And I'm here with somebody who knows how to pontificate.
I love pontificating.
I've known for a long time. A wonderful vocalist in Chicago, Stephanie Browning. And how are you, Stephanie?
Mike, I'm fine. Thanks for asking. And thanks for having me on. I love radio and I love podcasts. And I'm so, congratulations. I'm really excited for this new phase of your brilliant career.
Yeah. I don't know about brilliant, but it's a career. It keeps me busy. But you know, I wanted to have you on because you know, not only obviously you're, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners know the name Stephanie Browning. You came to Chicago from Colorado.
Yes.
And you got your start at the world famous Gold Star Sardine Bar.
I did.
Played with many of Chicago's finest musicians.
Mm-hmm.
You've traveled. You've done the Colorado Jazz Fest. You've done tours of Asia, tours of
Sweden.
That's
right.
Sweden
a couple of times. I did a tour in the Midwest with some great old jazz cats. Bob Magnuson was Sarah Vaughan's bass player, and I got to drive around with him in a van for a couple of weeks. So I've had some wonderful experiences as a performer coming out of Chicago and Chicago jazz.
Well, and you're also kind of taking that musical side of you and moved it into, you know, helping certain people and really opening up, and we're going to get really into that. And that's at the Garden Center Services Agency, which is where you're now working during the day. You're still playing a lot and still performing all over.
Oh, yeah.
But before we get into that, why don't we just give a real quick brief history? Obviously, for our younger listeners, they might not even know the Gold Star Sardine Bar, although it was still around in the 90s. But I know some people were born in the 90s that are listening to this show.
Yes,
if that's not scary
apparently.
Enough.
Apparently. There's no cutoff date for when you can be born. But I was thrilled to be part of the Gold Star Sardine Bar history. And it's strangely almost like a haunted castle. It's still there in the Playboy Building at 680 North Lakeshore Drive or North McClurg. And I came in there, brought a demo tape. Because that was a thousand years ago.
Tape. Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Boy, oh boy.
And Patricia Barber was there, and
she was playing regularly, steadily.
Yeah. And it was a magical night. I went, and Bill Allen, who was the proprietor, said, "Go sit in. I want you to sit in with Patty." And, you know, so Patricia Barber was backing me up, and I was singing, and Michelle Pfeiffer was in the audience that night with Fisher Stevens, because he used to bring her here. And Bill Allen and I were later back in the back room, and he said, "Watch this." And he picked up the phone, and he called Michael Snead. It was like 11 o'clock at night, and he called Michael Snead, and he's like, "Put Stephanie in your column tomorrow." And sure shooting, I was in the column the next day, next to Michelle Pfeiffer's picture, my name, Stephanie Browning, sang her, and I was like, wow, this is the big city. Oh, my gosh, the Gold Star Sardine Bar. Look it up. Haunted, tiny haunted gem of Chicago.
But that's really where you got, you know, honed your chops and got your jazz chops together. I mean, who was there? I mean, Jeremy Kahn.
Kahn, Joel Spencer, and Larry Cohut.
Right.
We used to call them Trio Blanco. And they were there for several years with Eden Atwood before I came along. So they were absolutely bulletproof as a band. I mean, loose, tight, both of those things in a good way. Loose in a good way and tight in a good way. And at the same time. So getting to come in there and, you know, ply my little new craft with that level of musician was the best school I could ever go to. I it was amazing. And the opportunity to do it night after night. I mean, I was at first just there on a Tuesday, and then Patricia Barber went to Northwestern to study music, and I took over her gigs, and then it was just kept opening up. So, I mean, I was there six nights a week
wow.
for a while. It was crazy. But with these just amazing musicians. So it I flourished there, and, you know, I still am waiting for another gig as good as that one to come along. I mean, it had everything. It had an in-tune, well-maintained piano. It had lights. It had a stage. It had promotions. It had a guy who kicked people out for talking, and that was the owner of the place. One night we were in there, and it was just me and him and the bartender. It was a really hot girl named Ginger. And then we had no customers, and he was coaching me. He was like, you know, sing it like this, sing it like that. And, oh, I guess there was a piano player there. Sorry,
right.
Brad Williams. But anyway, so these women came in, and they were fur-drenched and bejeweled, wealthy women from, you know, the
yeah.
North Coast. And they come in and sit down, and they're like, oh, this is wonderful. We're the only ones here. This is such a great experience, you know. And I'm singing Mean to Me. And Bill Allen's like, sing it louder. And I'm like, why won't you be? Now, sing it slower. Mean to Me. And these women are like, shut up. We want to hear her sing. He goes, oh, you tell me to shut up? He gets up, and I am not kidding. He grabs this woman by the scruff of their fur coats and shoves them out the door. They were our only customers. Oh, true story. Sorry, had a little flashback there. Good times. So anyway,
yeah, there
that's
isn't a club
where I learned
like that
how
anymore.
To sing. No, and Bill Allen would teach me about phrasing. I mean, I've had horn players come up to me that don't know me, like I hear me at a jazz festival or something, and say like, oh, you're phrasing. Like, who taught you to phrase? It was this cranky, crazy old genius in the back of the club eating sliders out of the microwave, and he would just tell me these songs. He would tell it like a story. I took a trip on a train, and I thought about you. And I would be like, I took a trip on a train, and I thought about you. And he'd be like, no, eat another hamburger. I took a trip on a train, and I thought about you. And I like, you know, it was like a Helen Keller thing where finally one day I'm like, oh, I get it, W-A-T-E-R. I understand. So, I don't know, that's like five stories wrapped in one.
No, that was great, though. That was great. But I think you really kind of summed that up. But that's how you got your beginnings.
It was the Bill Allen
School
Chantus Academy. That's right. And if you survive it, you're really good when it's over. If you don't, you're just like all the other girls piled up in the back.
You're right.
Oh,
well, so you made it through there.
I did.
You started traveling. You started
and I recorded
doing
a CD there.
That's right.
I recorded
That's
my
right.
CD. And it was John Larson is a wonderful man and a doctor and a jazz fan and a recording aficionado and a pretty fair piano player. And he came in one day as a sub for Jeremy Cotton, the piano player, and played. And he said, oh, I love the sound in here and your voice. Let's record it. So he was the reason that I did that CD.
Oh,
he did
okay.
it as a labor of love. And he even threw his back out. The day of the recording, I'm not kidding. I have pictures of him laying in the hallway in the back, laying on the floor on his back on a sleeping bag, mixing the record at live, you know,
right,
he set
yeah.
up. And it's such a great recording because it's totally transparent. It's two microphones and the band and me. And that's it.
And
I mean,
that's
there's
it.
Just, there's no room for anything. It's a complete performance with a small but devoted, loyal following, you know, a small audience. And it's just.
Well, it's all that fit in there, too, is a small
God
audience.
God, every day for yeah, I mean, it's, they call it the sardine bar because that's how you fit in there.
Yeah.
There's like
yeah.
20 people and you can smell all of them. But it's closed now, so that experience will not be available
to you.
No,
but that's a great recording. Why don't we hear a track off of that?
Oh, okay.
And what do you think we should listen to?
Oh,
you want to hear the first one? Or
I don't know. I've heard that one so many times. I love Black Coffee, and I love Say It Isn't So, but that's too sad. Don't do Say It Isn't So
okay.
to anyone.
So let's
or you could do You'd Be So Nice to Come Home To. It's really upbeat and it's quick. And Jeremy sounds ridiculous. Jeremy Kahn, crazy piano player. Do that. You'd Be So Nice to Come
okay.
Home To. You're always right.
Let's take a listen to that. So You'd Be So Nice to Come Home To off of Stephanie's debut CD, Live at the Gold Star. And this is You'd Be So Nice to Come Home To here on Chicago Jazz Revealed, 90.9 FM, WDCB.
While the breeze, oh,
Okay, we're back here at Chicago Jazz Reveal live at Katarina's, 1920 West Irving Park Road here in Chicago. I'm Mike Jeffers, and we are here with Stephanie Browning. We just heard a great track, You'd Be So Nice to Come Home To, off of her debut CD, Stephanie Browning, live at the Gold Star. And so you went from the Gold Star Sardine Bar. Obviously, you were probably playing at a lot of different places. I remember you playing at Lush Life. Green Mill, probably all
Pops,
over the place.
Pops. The old Pops, yes.
Yep. And you went from there, and then you did some things in Asia, right?
I did. I went to Hong Kong. I did an artist in residency kind of thing there at the Champagne Bar in the Grand Hyatt in Wan Chai in Hong Kong. And I did a small tour in Japan with Akio Sasajima, who put it together. And we went to Hokkaido and his hometown and Sapporo, and we were in Tokyo. And it was wild and amazing experience that I could tell you at length about, but I won't.
That's another show. That's another show.
Let's just talk about gigs we've done. It'll be a fun show.
That'll be like a separate podcast that we'll put on, and it could be 4 hours long.
It's true. I could do 2 hours on Japan, standing on one foot.
Well, but you did all of that, and obviously, you know, playing a lot in Chicago too. You've had stints at many different places. And now you find yourself doing something that I think you feel unbelievably passionate about, because you and I have talked about it before. And now you're working at the Garden Center Services Agency.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What is the Garden Center Services Agency?
Well, it's a sheltered workshop for adults with developmental disabilities, and it's way far south. Like, we're at Katarina's here.
Right.
It's really, really far from here. But it's in Burbank,
okay.
And they have two facilities. The other one is near Evergreen Park. So I have to back up a little bit to make sense of this, which is to say that in 1998, I had this idea, and it came to me. I was reading the book, 1984, and there's a part in there where there's a bird, and the guy sees the bird singing in this world of just despair and heartbreak, and he says, "Why does the bird sing?" And that question stuck in my head. And one day I saw a bird singing, and it was like there were buses and people and cars, and no one was paying any attention. And this bird was singing like his life depended on it. Like, this was the best thing he knew how to do. And the idea of why do birds sing stuck in my head. So I started coming up with this idea of a game, to create a game to teach people how to play music without words, like a nonverbal way to teach music.
Mm-hmm.
And originally my idea was for kids. And I found out that Mozart had a starling. Okay, the bird connection. Mozart had a pet starling. And I read this in Science News. This wasn't in some hippy-dippy publication. Science News. Mozart had a starling, and he loved the bird, and the bird would imitate his compositions. And Mozart respected the bird so much that the bird made occasional changes to Mozart's compositions,
really?
And Mozart amended his own manuscripts to reflect the bird's edits. I'm not making this up. So when the bird passed away, Mozart composed a piece and held graveside services and invited friends. So that's what Mozart's bird meant to him.
So Mozart
had a starling, and he loved the bird, and the bird was teaching him about music. And I thought, oh, the bird could teach. In the game, the bird could be the music teacher.
Yeah.
And so that's when I started thinking of music as analogous to flying. And I started thinking, oh, a video game that really teaches something.
Mm-hmm.
And this was many years ago, 1998 to be exact. So before Guitar Hero,
before everything.
Way before.
Yeah.
And it was a time when making a video game was completely out of my reach. It would have been just prohibitive. But that didn't stop me from dreaming, and I began to collect information. I began to study science and some hippy-dippy stuff, you know, like light therapy and color therapy.
Well, but you got to probably understand a lot of different things in order to develop what you're doing.
Yeah, and I think of this idea as a submerged chain. Like, I don't know where the end of it is, but I know that I must hold on to it and go link by link to follow where it's going, because it's important and it's my life's work, as it turns out. So this was years in the making, thinking about this idea, researching, drawing ideas, writing things down. So in 2010, I had a engagement that had gone on for many, many years and suddenly was ended. And
right.
I kind of looked under my calendar, and it was like, tumbleweeds.
Yeah, because you were playing steady, and all of a sudden it just stopped.
7.5 years, and just one day, it's like, oh, yeah, remember last Saturday night? That was your last night. Oh, thanks, guys. See ya.
Welcome to the music business,
yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. And suddenly I looked back on my career, and I went, wow, that's how they all end. So, you know, if you've got a steady right now, look out. No, I'm kidding. I'm
great.
Kidding. But it's the thing is, you got to realize it's not personal. That's just how the business works. So I found myself really wondering what's the next thing to do, because the gig I had was like the best gig in town. It paid the best. It was the fanciest place,
yep.
You know, good band, everything. And you just don't want to start working for half the pay, and you got to do something else. So I had the game idea, and I had this, let's call it an opportunity, of having nothing on my calendar in the perpetuity. So then comes my sister-in-law. Her name is Rebecca, and she has cerebral palsy. She's very sharp, but her disability is mostly physical in nature, and she goes to Garden Center Services.
Mm-hmm.
So she invited me to come and do some music there. She said, I think it would be great. I think people would like it. And I thought, okay, I'll do it, just to have something to do, get out of the house.
Right.
So I started doing sing-alongs, and it was supposed to be every other week, but the first week I fell so in love with it. I called him. I'm like, can I please come next Wednesday? I don't want to wait 2 weeks to come back. So I started going every week to do sing-along, and that went on for about 3 months. And then they said, we would like to have you come, you know, part-time, just a couple days a week,
yeah,
and do music with the people, not just a sing-along. And that's when I put the game idea and all this research and thought I'd put into that, and this opportunity to work with adults with developmental disabilities together. And it's been absolutely spectacular.
Yeah.
So they hired me in January of 2011 to come in 2 days a week, and in 2012 they made it 3 days a week. I have over 150 students.
Wow.
And all of them are different, like different ages from right out of high school to 85 years old. I mean, everything in between. Different disabilities, Down syndrome, cerebral palsy, autism, brain injury. And I was given this incredible opportunity to take my idea to this population and work with them and see what I could do.
Yeah.
And what they could do. And so it's been spine tingling and just constantly surprising. So just to give you an idea of my idea is, I basically boil it down to colors and shapes,
mm-hmm,
and I show it to people, and they can play a song after 2 minutes with me. Okay. And these are people who are nonverbal or who are not, very physically able, but we find a way to meet the person where they are. And I just heard the catchphrase for this. It's called neural diversity.
Okay.
I'm teaching to whatever part of that person's mind is available to me. Some people love colors, and that's all they see are the colors. And some people say the name of the color as they play the note on the piano. Other people love the shapes, and they say, like, circle, square, star, you know, as they play each one. Other people love the letters, and they just connect with the letters that are in music.
Yeah.
And I also put numbers, so if people like numbers, they can do that. I have a blind student who wanted a chart, so I had to come up with a way, how do you make a chart for a blind person to play the piano?
Right, yeah.
So I used glue and made dots on my shapes so that they could play the one chord. And then they play the five chord, and then they play the four chord. So I'm teaching a blind person how to play piano. I didn't know that I was going to need to bring my idea all that way.
Right.
But, you know, then I have a guy who's deaf, and I really thought, like, what can I do for him? I tried to get him to play the drums. Now, I know you went to Texas, and you had Evelyn Glennie, who's this amazing drummer. Google Evelyn Glennie and watch any of her videos.
Right,
She's incredible.
Amazing.
She's a profoundly deaf person who is the world's only solo percussion performer. And she's mesmerizing. So Evelyn Glennie inspired me to try to get my deaf student to play the drums. And it took me a year to just sort of gain his trust. And he taught me all kinds of sign language in the meantime. So getting better at sign language. But I finally got him to play the drums. He just kept saying, I don't know how, I don't know how. And I said, I know, but I'm going to show you. So I just showed him how to play on 1, 2, 3, 4.
Mm-hmm.
He's totally obsessed with it. He won't put the drum down until I pry it out of his hands.
No kidding.
He's in love with it. And one time I said to him, and I signed to him, you know, you've been playing the drums for 2 hours. And he said, I want 3 hours. You know, like, that's what, that is better than any gig I've ever done.
You know, it's amazing because what you're describing is, I don't think a lot of people understand how incredible music can touch people in so many different ways, but so deeply. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like really
it's
deep.
It's profound.
And I mean, you're experiencing it now.
I am.
Like more than any musician usually
yes,
experiences
yes.
it.
And it's not to say that it's magic. You know, I mean, well, it is magic, but I'm saying I'm not creating prodigies.
Right.
It's not like, oh, everyone has a hidden, everyone with a disability has a savant hidden talent, and
right.
I'm just bringing it up. No, that's not what it's about. This is about neuroscience. This is about reaching into a person's brain and giving them a rich synaptic experience.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a woman at Northwestern University. Her name is Nina Kraus, and she is amazing. She's a genius. She does this incredible research that I discovered when I thought, I should write a grant for myself. This is before I went to Garden Center. And I thought, okay, I'm going to write a grant. I'm just going to real quick learn how to write a grant. How hard
That's
can
no
it be?
Problem. How hard could that be?
And
everybody
in doing
gets a
that,
grant.
The first thing that I saw was determine the need for your product. So I started researching, you know, do people need a music game? And that's where I discovered Nina Kraus and her work.
Mm-hmm.
And she had been busily working, proving scientifically for the last 15 years what I've been trying to do intuitively, that music is for everyone.
Right.
It's not just for musicians, and it's not just for kids. It could music reaches into your brain and fires new synaptic pathways. And, you know, the whole idea, as I was growing up, we were taught that the brain is just like this kind of piece of cheese that's dead by the time you're 30,
piece
and it just gets
cheese.
More holes in it, so it's all Swiss cheese at the end. No,
piece
that's
of
wrong.
Cheese.
Neural plasticity is where it's at.
Okay.
My brain is not a piece of cheese. I don't know about you.
I don't know what book you've read. But
perhaps I should reconsider my early sources of knowledge about the brain. But Nina Kraus shows that neural plasticity, you're rebuilding the brain. You can fire new neurons even as an adult.
Yeah.
So I'm watching these people who don't speak and of whom nothing is expected play a song the first time they try it and experience success.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
It is. It's profound.
Yeah.
And again, it's not magic. It's not like that we're headed for Carnegie Hall. But who cares about that? That's
right.
Not what it's about. My agenda when I'm at work is joy.
Mm-hmm.
I want to bring joy in that one moment when I'm there with them. And success for them equals joy. Confidence, it's more than joy. It's like it lasts. I mean, and I just can't. I mean, I could do 5 hours on this.
I could tell.
The people who I met, like every person is a story. One time there was a woman and she had experienced this tragic death of her piano teacher. He was like this beloved figure in her life, and he suddenly passed away, and she hadn't played the piano since. And it had been like 15 years.
Wow.
And I said, you know, if you ever want to get back on, just let me know. And I didn't try to force her. And then I found, oh, this is her pastor's favorite song. I'm like, well, if you ever want to learn your pastor's favorite song, I'm here for you. So the first time she did it, she was trembling like a leaf. Her hands were shaking.
Yeah.
And she said, I'm falling off the keys. And like this experience was so terrifying to her and so real. But she did it and she played a song. And it was a simple song, but it was a huge breakthrough for her. And I was so excited. I'm like, oh my God, you did it, you did it. She goes, you're making fun of me. I said, no, I'm not. I never, ever would.
Right, yeah.
This is a big deal. You just conquered your biggest fear. This is something most people aren't willing to do,
mm-hmm.
and you did it. And that's when the people around her started to say, good job, good job. And, you know, again, it's not like she's ever going to play a solo
right.
concert. But what we had in that moment was so real. And in a way, more real than anything I ever experienced at, you know, the place that fired me with no notice and no explanation. So I feel that I want to be Okay, so I want to talk a little bit more about the work that I do, because the profound nature of it is incredible. I've been working with people's hands, trying to show them how to play the piano.
Yeah.
And I would say, like, okay, use your middle finger. And they didn't know where their middle finger was.
Really?
Which, you know, could be a good thing. But, sorry.
They might want to show it to you.
Right. So I started this idea. I call it hand mapping, and it's very simple. I trace around their fingers, and as I do, I touch each finger, and it's a very intimate feeling to have that pen come around mm-hmm. your fingers. And then I take their hand off, and I say, this is your hand map. And I talk about each finger. This is your thumb. This is your pointer finger. This is your middle finger. And I'm not kidding. People will look at this and be like, oh, I want to show this to my family. Like, they have discovered a part of themselves, yeah. their hand.
Yeah.
And they're seeing it for the first time. And it's available to them. And this is just something that I would have never, in my idea of creating a music game for kids, never come up with this. But this is powerful. So I modified a yoga mudra, which is this very simple hand exercise where you touch your thumb to your pointer finger. And then you move from your thumb and pointer to your thumb and middle finger, mm-hmm. thumb and ring finger, thumb and little finger. And I taught them this as a piano exercise. They don't know it also increases focus and concentration
sure,
as
yeah.
a yoga mudra. But I do this with them. They call it piano fingers. And they do it every day in some classes.
Wow.
And so now I can say to a person, use your middle finger. And she didn't used to know where it was. And now she knows where it is.
Yeah.
That is neural plasticity. We have written something in her brain that wasn't there before
mm-hmm.
that she can use. And it's not just that she knows where that finger is. It's that she's using it to play her favorite
right.
song. And I mean, it's
you're
so
developing so many different connections.
It's incredible to
yeah.
see. Like, it's such a simple gift to trace somebody's hand and teach them where their fingers are. But the thing about it that I find really fascinating, being someone who's come into this field of working with adults with developmental disabilities with no
right.
training or
right.
any background or anything, I showed this to her teacher, and her teacher said, I did not realize how profound her disability was in this aspect. So not only did this girl not know where her fingers were, no one around her knew she didn't know.
Right.
So no one could tell her.
Right.
So now she, and one of the people that I've had this experience with only has the use of one hand. So she went from having one finger available to her to having five. Can
Isn't that
you imagine?
Amazing?
I mean, I feel so fortunate to have been able to sort of make this discovery. I mean, I feel like real science is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing about it is sometimes I turn around and there's no one there to see it. It's like me and the tree falling in the forest that nobody hears. But, you know, I think that's the next step, is taking this idea and bringing it out of my little laboratory and making it available. I mean, I am a big dreamer. I don't mess around with small dreams. So in my wildest, far-flung imagination, this idea could become a way to give other underemployed musicians, such as myself, the opportunity to have this experience.
Sure.
And to use music as a healing, bridge building, brain firing, explosion of love and joy. I mean,
yeah.
I would say that any musician would love doing what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
Except when you have to get up early in the morning. But other than that, it's great. If we just get these guys to start work at 11, I'd be in heaven.
Now, is there some way, because I mean, and I love having you on the show because you ask the same, you keep talking, and then you keep answering the questions I'm going
to
ask. So I don't even have to ask anything. I could have just
gone
and hung out at the bar with Paul, who's coming up next.
And I would have been all good. No.
But that was great. And I think everybody in the everybody listening can hear the passion and can hear the importance of the whole thing. So it's Garden Center Services Agency. Is there a way if somebody wants to donate? I know that you're always looking for maybe musical instruments.
Yes,
and
we need drums. We need practice pads.
Practice pads.
We need sticks. We need, we need everything. It is difficult to specifically donate money and earmark it for the music program, but if you want to buy a keyboard or a drum kit or whatever, that would be great.
How can they contact them?
I would say contact me, okay, and I'll steer them to the right person.
So it's chicagojazz.com/Stephanie Browning.
Right. It has an email.
Or StephanieBrowning.com too.
Yeah, StephanieBrowning.com. That's right. And I'm starting, my technique is called Sparticles. And so I have a website that I'm working on, Sparticles Music.
Mm-hmm.
And Sparticles is like particles with an S in front of it. Sparticles.
Sparticles.
So, Sparticles are, I learned about them when I was studying quantum physics, but that's a whole other thing.
Yeah, let's not
but
get into
no,
that. We
going,
don't have enough time.
We're not
time.
Going down that road. But so Sparticles Music will be the website for this. And it's just not quite, I'm not quite ready with it yet. So
StephanieBrowning.com. They can email you right through there.
There's an email there. And, I think that it could be, yeah, it could be an app. It could be, there's so many ways that this idea can grow.
Well, it's, as you're doing this, you're finding out how many different things just start firing off of one idea. So just mm-hmm. imagine when everything gets going. So, you know, definitely. So StephanieBrowning.com for more details. They can mm-hmm. contact you mm-hmm. through your email. I know that you're looking for drum sets, keyboards, drumsticks, drum pads. Mm-hmm. I know I owe you a practice pad that I had in my car, and then
didn't mean to hit
then
that
I took
one
it
too
out,
hard.
And then I heard it. I'll get it to you. Trust me. Well, thanks for coming in.
Mike, thank you so much for having me on the show to talk about this. You can tell I could talk about it for 5 more hours. But I'm really excited.
Chicago Jazz Revealed, live at Katarina's, is produced by Chicago Jazz Magazine and WDCB. I'm your host, Mike Jeffers. Thanks again to our sponsor, University of Chicago Presents, and of course, Katarina's. Tonight's show, but with extended interviews, is available on podcast at chicagojazz.com. Until then, good night.